Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, June 27th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Jonga Kandemiri.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Opposition MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai says he has cancer of the colon.
He was diagnosed with cancer of the colon. There are several procedures that are involved after a diagnosis. So as we speak, he went back to South Africa last Sunday and is undergoing chemotherapy.
A church denomination staged protest over Zimbabwe's national pledge being recited in schools.
We are saying no to Dokora.
Yes.
We are saying no to Satanism.
Yes.
As Zimbabweans, we are saying we need our country back.
Yes.
This evening we'll be focusing on the life and legacy of the late Vice President Joshua Mukomo.
He was such a great man who provided wise words and wisdom to his people. And I think if people follow his footsteps, there will be peace and harmony in the world. He was a peace-loving guy and a father figure.
And civil servants hold a crucial meeting with government on late June salaries.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Former Prime Minister and Movement for Democratic Change founding President Morgan Tsvangirai says he has cancer of the colon. In a brief statement, Tsvangirai said on the 8th of May 2016, his Zimbabwean doctors referred him to South Africa, where a further diagnosis revealed that he was suffering from cancer of the colon. Tsvangirai said following the diagnosis last month, he underwent an operation that was very successful. However, he said a diagnosis of cancer is the first of several medical procedures that include treatment through chemotherapy, which he is undertaking at the moment. Tsvangirai said, quote, as a leader and a public figure, I have taken a decision to make public my condition. It is my firm belief that the health of national leaders, including politicians, should not be a subject of national speculation and uncertainty, end quote. Tsvangirai, who was part of the unity government between 2009 and 2013, said his health condition is unfortunate but can be faced by anyone. He noted that he intends to confront his development with determination in order to overcome it. Studio 7's Blessing Zulu speaks with Tsvangirai spokesman Luke Tamborinyoka about his health condition.
Mr. Tsvangirai is recovering as we speak. He's in South Africa where he's undergoing chemotherapy. As you know, Blessing, he has just issued a statement to the people of Zimbabwe saying that on the 6th of May, he went to South Africa and he was diagnosed with cancer of the colon. But as you know, there are several procedures that are involved after a diagnosis. So as we speak, he went back to South Africa last Sunday and he's undergoing chemotherapy.
Why has he decided to tell the nation about his illness now?
And as far as he is concerned, it speaks to the values that he holds so dear, the values of transparency and honesty. And as he said in his own statement, that true national leadership must always be open about things such as one's state of health. He doesn't believe in secrets around these matters. And to some of us, it speaks to the quality of leadership.
That was Luke Tamborinyoka, spokesperson of former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
Members of various church organizations under the banner of the Prayer Network of Zimbabwe staged a peaceful demonstration in Harare today, demanding the resignation of Primary and Secondary Education Minister Lazarus Dokora over the government's introduction of the national pledge in schools. The churches argue that the pledge violates their right to freedom of worship. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Jesus. More than 100 members of the Prayer Network of Zimbabwe gathered in central Harare today, demanding that Education Minister Dokora should leave office within 2 days for imposing the national pledge on their children. The demonstrators, who were holding holy crosses and placards with messages denouncing Dokora, addressed people in bank queues and bus termini, as well as busy road intersections, before passing through Parliament on their way to the minister's office. There was a near scuffle between anti-riot police and the demonstrators just outside Parliament when police unsuccessfully tried to block them from proceeding with their march. The situation was saved by some leaders of the protest group who shot the police a clearance letter that was issued by some top officers, resulting in the demonstrators singing even louder. One of the demonstrators, Obet Masaraure, who is also the president of the Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, said most teachers in the countryside were against the Education Ministry's directive to force school children to recite the national pledge.
We have urged all our members not to undertake the national pledge.
Another demonstrator, Patson Zamara, said it was now time for the church to join forces with other activists to ensure that the government meets the demands of ordinary Zimbabweans.
We are saying no to Dokora.
Yeah.
We are saying no to Satanism.
Yeah.
Reverend Anselm Magaya, who also participated in the march, said there were many things that the National Pledge violates, adding that its introduction was tantamount to promoting Satanism. He added that instead of introducing the National Pledge, the government must fulfill other issues that it pledged to do, such as providing jobs.
We are here to declare that Zimbabwe will never be the same again. We are here to declare that the church will never be the same as definers of historic transition of this our nation.
Prayer Network of Zimbabwe founder and president Jacob Ngarivume told the demonstrators that allowing children to recite the national pledge was unconstitutional and ungodly.
The national pledge is a careless oath.
Right.
The protest was also graced by some politicians such as Zunde leader Farah Imbire, Dare leader Matthias Dzikiti and leader of the MDCT Youth Assembly, Happy Mochidziva, as well as representatives of some civil society organizations. Mbire told the gathering that the time was now ripe for President Mugabe to leave the expectations of the people.
It's never left to a government to decide. It's never left to a minister to decide. But it is your personal decision, and there are times when you have to defend your faith.
Some representatives of the demonstrators left a petition at Dokora's office where they met with his deputy, Larry Mavima. Mavima told Studio 7 that there was nothing his ministry could say because the national pledge is before the courts.
The petition cannot be reacted to at this particular point in time because the matter of the school, the national school pledge, is a sub judice matter.
Mavima said the demonstrators also demanded a national referendum on the national pledge, but he noted that this was a very long and expensive process.
A referendum has a specific legal process that it follows. That someone has just raised it as a possibility does not mean that it can take place. Citizens in this country have the freedom to follow the correct channels if they want a referendum on the national schools pledge.
The protesters left an assortment of placards at the entrance of Dokora's office. The national pledge reads as follows, quote, Almighty God, in whose hands our future lies, I salute the national flag, respecting the brave fathers and mothers who lost lives in the Chimurenga, Umvukela. We are proud inheritors of the richness of our natural resources. We are proud creators and participants in our vibrant traditions and cultures. So I commit to honesty and the dignity of hard work and court.
For all
Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
In a related development, a member of the Tajamuka Sesijikile political protest group, Sten Zorwadza, who was arrested for staging a protest at the Sheraton Hotel against Vice President Pelegezela Mpoko's continued stay at the hotel, was today granted a $200 bail by Harare magistrate. According to our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi, Zorwadza was ordered not to set foot at Sheraton Hotel. His group is demanding that Mpoko should leave the hotel where the government is paying for his expenses.
The late Vice President Joshua Nkomo, a fiery Zimbabwean nationalist, died almost 17 years ago at the age of 82. Nkomo, an advocate of land reform under the, quote, son of the soil, end quote, slogan of the 1970s, may never have lived to enjoy the fruits of independence like millions of people in the Southern African nation. Before independence, Nkomo and other freedom fighters promised that Zimbabweans would live in a land of milk and honey. But 36 years after independence, most local people are living from hand to mouth, a far cry from what they were promised when they took up arms to fight against the Ian Douglas Smith regime. Despite the harsh social, economic and political environment in the country, Nkomo's legacy lives on. In the first edition of a six-part series focusing on Nkomo's life and legacy, Studio 7's Gibbs Dube today looks into the life of the country's politician, political icon, once considered by the Rhodesian government as a terrorist leader.
The late Joshua Mkabuo Nyongolo Nkomo, a son of a teacher and lay preacher of the London Missionary Society in Zimbabwe's Kezi District, Matelang South Province, was born in 1917. At the age of 35, after working as a truck driver and carpenter and getting involved in trade unionism, he was elected president of the Southern Rhodesia African National Congress, a major political party at that time. Nkomo spearheaded the liberation struggle under the National Democratic Party when the colonial regime banned the Southern Rhodesia African National Congress. When the NDP was also banned, he formed the Zimbabwe People's Union, or ZAPU. He was locked up in prison between 1964 and 1974 and managed to sneak out of the country after his release to lead the nationalist movement. Zimbabweans in all parts of the country called him Father Zimbabwe, Umtalawetu, or Our Old Man, and Chibwe Chidedza, or Slippery Rock, among many other nicknames. His name became synonymous with the aspirations of black nationalists and their followers. Following the country's independence in 1980, after a brutal liberation struggle, he was appointed cabinet minister by Prime Minister Robert Mugabe, but fell out of favor as his former ZAPU Party junior accused Nkomo of attempting to stage a coup. This resulted in the deployment of the North Korean-trained 5th Brigade in the Matabeleland and Midlands provinces, leading to the massacre of an estimated 20,000 innocent civilians, mostly Nkomo's PF ZAPU supporters. The government has never revealed the number of people who were killed by the crack unit, though Mr. Mugabe once described the massacres as a moment of madness. The then Zimbabwean Prime Minister claimed that he wanted to get rid of dissidents in the two regions using his army, commonly known as Kukurahundi. Nkomo fled the country, fearing for his life, but later returned home. The Kukurahundi massacres led to the signing of a unity agreement by the late Vice President and Mr. Mugabe in 1987. Who was Father Zimbabwe Umtalawetu or Chipo Chitedza? Apart from being a nationalist leader, Nkomo was a married man, a father, grandfather and great-grandfather. Life was tough for the Nkomo family when he decided to decolonialize the country. His son Sibangilizwe still remembers the time his father was away from home. His mother, Joanna Mafuyane Nkomo, played a key role in looking after the family when Nkomo was in the guerrilla trenches.
My mother was a very, very hardworking person, a woman with imagination. You know, she would use her skills, sewing skills, cooking skills, to get some money for us to go to school. So somehow we managed. Of course, there was always the goodwill of my father's business friends who would come up with help. Also, there was the Christian Care organization that at a later stage, during our secondary education, they helped us out.
Nkomo was highly respected in his village in St. Joseph's Mission area. Tandi Moyo of St. Anne Mission, a few kilometers from Nkomo's homestead, explains.
He was such a great man who provided wise words and wisdom to his people. And I think if people follow his footsteps, there will be peace and harmony in the world. He was a peace-loving guy and a father figure.
She says his legacy lives on despite the few achievements after independence.
As a person from Kezi, our place is underdeveloped and kids still travel long distances to school. There is a lot of improvement that needs to be done. Even the roads are pathetic.
Nkomo's brother-in-law, Lavmo Fuyane, believes that Nkomo always put his country first.
The one thing that really stands out for me as far as Dr. Joshua Nkomo is concerned is the idea of Zimbabweanness. In other words, a person that thinks of the nation first before themselves. This is really what his legacy represents, right from the time that he fought for the liberation of the country as well as the time that he served in government.
Fuyane says the late vice president's legacy should be emulated by all Zimbabweans.
We need to inculcate more this culture of Zimbabweanness and thinking about the country first before thinking ourselves. There's no better way to celebrate his legacy than that. That really is what we need to do. We need to pass that on to the younger generation so that we begin to have a lot more of a sense of self-belief in ourselves. There's no society out there that has ever been able to uplift itself without having that inner belief cutting across the entire spectrum of society.
He explains how this can be done.
There are movements out there, both inside and outside the country. I mean, I'll just give one example of a movement known as Oats Flag, which is really beginning to speak to citizens standing up for their country, standing up for what the flag represents within the national spectrum in Zimbabwe.
At national level, Nkomo was regarded as a humble man, despite leading an armed struggle against white domination. Sifasi Msipa, one of Nkomo's close associates in PF ZAPU, says apart from being a visionary leader, Nkomo was a peacemaker.
Nkomo was able to bring people together. He was genuine in really trying to understand people and to bring them together. And I think he will always be remembered for that. Yes, he loved peace. Although he had suffered under Mugabe, he was still prepared to work under him for the sake of peace, hence the Unity Accord. It was not easy for him to accept it, but he did it for the sake of peace. So Nkomo was a man of peace.
In our next edition, our correspondent Gandhi Maramba we'll be focusing on Nkomo's calls for a comprehensive land reform program in Zimbabwe. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, D.C., this is Kip Stube.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C.
Coming up,
a closer look at the causes and methods of preventing cancer.
Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
First Lady Michelle Obama landed in Africa today with her daughters and her mother for an overseas trip promoting education for girls, starting with the country recovering from the recent Ebola epidemic. The Obamas were welcomed in Liberia's capital with a red carpet and traditional dancers wearing the red, white and blue colors of both the American and Liberian flags. They also will visit Morocco and Spain. While in Liberia, the First Lady will meet with the president of the West African country, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, the country's first female elected head of state. Pastor Joseph Munyangata, a Zimbabwean living in New York who was once based in Malawi, tells Studio 7's Choniso Jani that African First Ladies and other leaders should promote Mrs. Obama's trust towards the empowerment of girls.
There are several factors that causes girls not to have access to education. You look at the issue of poverty. You look at early child marriages and violence. These are key factors. There has to be a way in which these girls can be empowered such that they are able to even have access to the educational system.
First Lady of the United States, Michelle Obama, is running with this project of girl education. Do you believe that this could be a positive step to African countries?
The White House data stipulates that there are over 250 million girls living in poverty, and they are in struggling economies. One in every three by the age of 18, they're already married, and with poor health facilities, with poor educational outcomes, with other factors that are negative contributing to their level of poverty, it makes it even worse in Liberia and focusing on Morocco and so forth. They would soon change the whole paradigm, because you educate a girl, they say you educate a village. And so it's a great initiative, but we need many more people who can stand with the First Lady of United States, Michelle Obama, other First Ladies of other countries. If they can stand up and support here, not only First Ladies, but all leaders in general, this would make a huge difference.
That was Pastor Joseph Munyangata, a Zimbabwean living in New York, who was once based in Malawi, speaking to Studio 7's Chioniso Jani. The Cancer Association of Zimbabwe says Zimbabweans should go for early colon cancer screening annually so that they can receive treatment should they have the disease. The Cancer Association of Zimbabwe Health Services Manager Lynn Mupunzwana says those over 40 should prioritize their health and get screened to avoid complications later. Mupunzwana says it is important for people to eat well and follow a good diet, as well as exercise regularly, to ensure that they're in good health to avoid getting different cancers, including colon cancer.
Colon cancer is when you have a growth which is cancerous on the colon. The colon is the large intestine.
What is the cause of colon cancer?
The cause, basically, like most cancers, the causes are unknown. But you find that our lifestyle, especially when we look at our diet, can contribute to the incidence of colon cancer.
What are the symptoms of colon cancer?
Normally, someone will have abdominal discomfort. But with time, you can have diarrhea alternating with constipation. You can also have blood stools, which can occur. And as it advances, you can have loss of weight. You can have difficulty passing the stool, depending on the size and the situation of the cancer.
Is it most common in men or women, especially in Zimbabwe? What statistics are you seeing currently?
I don't have the statistics offhand, but you see it in both males and females. And normally you'll see it in people above the age of 40, although at times you can see it in the 30-year-olds, but mostly it's late 30s, 40-year-olds and above.
And what are you urging people to do in order to perhaps be vigilant about not taking care that they are not affected by colon cancer? What are you urging people to do?
What we are encouraging people to do is to look at our lifestyle, look at our diet. Because, I mean, if you look at your lifestyle, if you look at your diet, your alcohol consumption, your smoking habits, your exercising habits, you find that you can reduce the amount of cancer. So we are encouraging people to live a healthy lifestyle, to have a high-fiber diet, to have low-fat diet, plenty of water, and to exercise. We are also encouraging people that if you have a persistent symptom, 3 to 4 weeks having the same symptom, even if you say you have the symptom, you go to your doctor, you're treated, and it comes again, we are saying have it checked, just to exclude the conditions like cancer of the colon.
You were mentioning earlier on that most people go for diagnosis late. Tell us a little bit about that. What are you encouraging people to do?
To report to a doctor or to a clinic or any health facility after 3 to 4 weeks of a persistent symptom or noticing anything. What can be screened? We are encouraging people to get screened, like the cervical, the breast, the prostate. But things that don't have the actual screening mechanism, we are saying any persistent symptom, have it checked. But you find that with most people, there are several reasons why people don't go early. It could be financial implications. It could be fear. It could be You know, there are people who might believe that, okay, I'll go to areas where they can pray for me, I can go to traditional healers. So there are various reasons which make people delay going to hospitals.
And also, are there places where people can just walk in and ask to have a colonoscopy?
Not as such, because what you do is to have a colonoscopy, you need to be referred. So your first port of call is go to your clinic, go to your doctor, we'll refer you for a colonoscopy. So, I mean, we don't have that facility whereby people will just walk in for a colonoscopy.
And let's say somebody is diagnosed as having colon cancer. Are there places where people can have chemotherapy, and how affordable is chemotherapy in Zimbabwe?
There are areas where people can have chemotherapy drugs. They are available, and the prices do vary depending on the drugs that you have been prescribed. But for those who are going to the public hospitals, should you not afford to buy the chemo, we at the Cancer Association, we have got some organizations which donate some money to us. It might not be very much, but we are able to purchase some chemo drugs. We liaise with the doctors at the hospitals, which ones are they mostly prescribing. So we will buy those range, which are not very, very expensive, so that at least we can cater for quite a number of those who cannot afford to buy the drugs.
That was the Cancer Association of Zimbabwe Health Services Manager Lynn Mupunzwana speaking to us from Harare.
While discussions over the deferment of civil servants' salaries continue in Harare between government ministers and civil servants' representatives, the Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe has announced that it will embark on a sit-in at Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa's offices beginning July 1st until they are paid their June salaries. Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe Secretary General Robson Chere says it is likely that nothing favorable will come out of that meeting as they are planning ahead. The government announced it was unable to pay its workers their June salaries on time and was proposing shifting the pay dates to end of this month until mid-July, a move resisted by civil servants under the Apex Council. Labor, Finance and Health Ministers, together with Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe, Governor and Civil Service Commission officials, were meeting with civil servants' representatives to try and break a previous deadlock. But already many unions have hinted that their members will not go beyond July 1st without being paid their June salaries. Chere tells Studio 7 they want to force the government to urgently act on their demands.
We are not surprised, and we are very much likely to meet a scenario whereby nothing will come out from that meeting, because this meeting has been held since long back, but nothing really that will come up with to advantage the teacher in class. Definitely, if the outcome is not favorable to the constituents that we represent, we are going on with what we have planned. We are going on with the demonstration that we are going to carry. That is what the position is so far. We are going to have a sitting at the Minister of Finance offices, at the headquarters of the Minister of Finance offices, from the 1st of July until we get paid.
But the government made it clear that it does not have money to pay you as per the June agreement.
If it doesn't have money, we are not the people who have caused the problem. They should find alternative ways of addressing the situation. We cannot actually say we want to normalize the abnormal situation, because right now it's an abnormal situation. They can't account even for the $15 billion. That should even be added to our salary. So we cannot actually sit down and agree that there's no money. Yet we know that there are some loopholes within the system whereby revenue is being lost through things like corruption. So we cannot actually normalize the abnormal situation. The salary for this month should come this month, not next month.
That was Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe Secretary General Robson Chere on the phone from Goromonzi. Studio 7 failed to reach Minister Prisca Mfumira for a comment.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. Today, our hosts Blessing Zulu and Gibbs Dube will be talking with listeners about cancer. Former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai revealed today that he has colon cancer. What is cancer and how can it be prevented? So don't miss Live Talk tonight. Now to recap on tonight's top stories.
Opposition MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai says he has colon cancer.
And church denominations stage a protest over Zimbabwe's national pledge being recited in schools.
And now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.